Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Tranklebury. And I think my throat's going to make me cough again. So why don't you tell us what we're talking about today, Carl?
Well, this is part two of questions that I've gotten on my new book on FMEA. It's a simplified book. It's an ebook focusing on principles and examples and lots of multiple choices and, you know, things like that. And case studies, and I have 35 people that have agreed to review it, and we're in the review process. And as part of the reviews, they're asking questions. Well, they go, "Well, I'm not really sure what to do about this. What do you think?" And so I'm making a list of those questions, which I really enjoy the dialogue. I think application is so important to get it right, and to have a certain amount of humility that there are different ways to apply. And so it's kind of fun. And I've got one that came up on FMEA compensating provisions. And I just thought that would be, because it came up a couple of times from people going, you know, we don't have that in the automotive standard. And I have it in my book for a specific reason, which I'll explain. And it's in many of the other standards for FMEA, but not in the automotive one. And they go, why isn't that in the automotive standard if it's important? I thought that's an interesting question.
You're going to have to back up even for me, Carl. I don't recall running across that phrase, compensating provisions, in reference to FMEA. So I'm not even sure what it is.
I'll explain it.
Okay.
And now it's like two different worlds. The commercial world doesn't use it, but they actually do in a certain place. They have a column called prevention controls, which I'll explain how that covers that base in a certain way. And then the defense industry uses a standard that has compensating provisions. So let me explain. Definition of compensating provisions are design provisions and or operator actions which circumvent or mitigate the effect of the failure. They're in essence, Fred, a severity mitigation strategy.
So as an example would be
high severity.
Okay. So as an example would be, a lot of modern cars now have air pressure sensors, and it allows, it's kind of like the oil light, but that's a different thing, isn't it? Isn't that detection? And then you get a chance to go do something. Would that fall into a...
Well, it can. The whole point of compensating is, do you have something in the design, like you sense temperature is getting too high on something, right? So you then have a strategy that automatically goes into compensate for, or you have the operator takes a certain action based on the sensor, a flashing light goes off in the cockpit of an airplane. Mm-hmm. So they can be either by design, where they're part of the design to compensate, or they can be operator actions where the operator, like the pilot or the driver or the rider on a bicycle, makes some adjustments. So there's tons of examples, but two of the most common categories of example is fail safe. So you can design a product so if you have a failure, it fails in a safe manner.
Well, I'm thinking of
that's a compensating
like
provision.
Integrated circuits, ICs. Well, the bigger ones now carry, or in for years and years and years now, will have a thermistor in them that monitors their temperature. And as it gets too hot, it throttles back the capacity or the ability of that IC to operate. It slows it down, which cools it down. Would that be an example of it built into the design? It compensates for a high heat experience?
If it's something that the design senses, mm-hmm. tracks, analyzes, and then sees it goes to a point that could become potentially dangerous or threaten the mission, and then compensates for it in some way, if it's automatic or puts in mm-hmm. place action, That is by definition a compensating provision.
Okay.
Sometimes designs have no compensating provision. So you fail in a bad way, people can get hurt, or sometimes designs have a run flat tire where you got a blowout, but you can make it safely to the side of the road, or even if you have the right kind of run flat tire, you could make it all the way to the mechanic to replace it.
I did that. I was on a cross country trip with a couple of my college buddies, and we had I think it was a 1962 great big monster car that had seen many, many better days in its prior life. And it was a Wyoming field car now. So they would drive around in the fields counting cattle and stuff like that. And he brought it to school, and we're doing a trip in that summer. And at 3 a.m, that tire blew out, and it was a retread to start with. So the retread came off, and then it finally went flat. And we were 5 miles from the next exit, which we hoped had a service station at it and it would be open. So we limped along on the rims.
Until wow. We got there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's so many stories. I remember I worked with I won't mention the name, but I worked with a lawn mower company that part of their design is if that lawnmower turns over, like you're on a hill.
Yeah.
God forbid it turns over. Well, you want that thing to stop. You don't want that blade to be flashing around. Same with a snowblower. If something gets stuck in there, you want it to turn off rather than jam and break the engine, or God forbid you put your hand in there.
Yeah.
Same thing with a garage door opener, for example. If you you don't want that garage door to come down on your head or your arm. So there's thousands of examples of how designs compensate and systems compensate so that the hopefully no one gets hurt. Hopefully the equipment doesn't get seriously damaged. And so this compensating provisions column identifies those and evaluates them.
Yeah. But I can see where a lot of people wouldn't do that. If it's already in the design that we're going to have a sensor going across the base of the garage, so that if somebody or something is there, it'll reverse the engine on the motor on the garage door. So the automatic garage door will have a built-in design feature that says, if there's an obstruction, we're going to back off.
Yes.
And that's in the design. So if it's just coming down, one of the failure modes that it strikes something is already mitigated. But it has to be that sensor has to fail and there's an obstruction there. It just makes it a little more complex than if you have a compensating provision clause in there. But I think you still got to take, what if that compensating system that fails? That becomes a whole nother line, I think, then.
Yeah, so there's different ways you can do this. The point is, obviously, safety is very, very important. And so one of the purposes of an FMEA is to help create a design that is safe and reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to highlight safety issues. And one of the ways that is done is by this column called compensating provisions to see, does that system work well enough? So you say in that garage door opener piece, you're going along your FMEA on it. The function is to open and close the garage door, whatever you say there. You say, okay, you don't want somebody to get hurt. You don't want to affect. Like you could say, if that garage door closes on top of someone, then the effect potentially is they could get hurt.
Yeah.
And the compensating provision is in the design, is a little trip switch that sends a signal and that opens the garage door back up. And you basically state that. And then you evaluate, is that a good, do you have confidence that that's going to work? In other words, because we're going to rate the severity, and that's, therein comes the rub here.
Okay. So is the severity on that it fails, or is it on that it works, the compensating provisions?
Beautiful. You just hit it right on, because if you have a high severity, if you don't think that trip wire is very good, you're going to leave that severity high, that potentially somebody could get hurt. But if you have a really good, that's been proven tripwire system that hasn't failed in years, blah, 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 you might say, okay, the worst that's going to happen is, you know,
going to touch somebody.
Yeah.
Back off. It's going to have a pressure
sensor. It goes back up.
Yeah.
This is a extremely important decision and part of the FMEA process. All compensating provisions column does is it puts it, makes it visible. Okay. You show that this is what's the design. Then the team has to decide, do we take into account that or not? Do we say the end effect is still very severe, or do we lower the end effect? We make that visible with the compensating provision followed by an end effect reevaluated. So there's two columns there. What's the compensating provision? And then reevaluating the end effect if the team is confident that that provision is a good provision. And so it's always been in the mill standard since the decades and decades.
Right.
It's been in some commercial standards, but not in others. And so all SAE 1025, the new standard that came out that replaces 1629 and actually works with a lot of other industries, and we're working with automotive on that, is to make the compensating provisions visible and so that the team can then decide based on considering what's the actual provision.
Yeah, so when you're thinking through the ranking type stuff, it's a consensus in the group that we're considering that we have these backup systems that will reverse the garage door, for example.
Yes.
Or yes. Not, but it makes it very clear.
Or, you know, wait, we're not comfortable with that system, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or, and I really recommend this, use the recommendations column to take action so you are comfortable with that provision. So you might say, we're going to launch a specific FMEA on the tripwire signal to make sure that is highly reliable. And on and on and on. I mean, in my book, I use a case study of a DC-10 1978, where the cargo door blew out, which you don't want to have happen when you're flying.
Nope.
and it blew out because of certain reasons. And they have a compensating provision in there that didn't alert the pilot, da-da-da-da. And so what they should have done back in 1978 or before is they should have done a specific study on that provision. And so I use the recommendations column to make sure those provisions, safety provisions, are robust.
Yeah.
If you're not confident.
Which is really difficult if it's a brand new design. I would elevate it to its own subsystem and FMEA and that part of it.
Yeah, exactly. You can do that. You can say, okay, this tripwire system, whatever you call it, is its own item in an FMEA, its own subsystem. And then you FMEA that. When I go to safety issues like that, I'll go the extra mile to make sure everybody's comfortable with it. And doing a targeted FMEA on that can be a very good solution.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Now, this is completely aside, and it's probably because I'm rewatching a lot of the early Star Trek TV shows. instead of a garage door with the danger of it hitting you, and I know that as garage doors age, the tracks get out of alignment, and that puts a lot of backward pressure on it. And so they have to overcome the frictional forces of rolling down the track, even when they get out of alignment and they get rusty and the bearings start to fail. But not so much so that it automatically reverses itself because of the motor sensor saying, hey, we're drawing too much current, we'll back up. And well, how about we use a force field that's opaque? And then it made me think, are force fields opaque? Can you make them that way? So that might be an idea for a whole new garage door technology that it completely avoids it. Hitting you on the head. Instead, it'll just slice you in half if you're in the way because it's a force field, or throw you off of the room. But that's just complete aside. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's a good aside. And that came about from watching Star Trek. How fascinating. Well, and just to trip off on that for a minute, you could have sensors on the motor, for instance, and if the motor shows it's increasing its amperage or it's, you know, whatever, because of out of alignment and stuff like that, That could go in one direction, but on the tripwire, of course, that's a signal that goes across that if you walk into it, you're actually tripping a signal.
Yeah, and it's usually just a couple inches off the floor, so you can jump over it, which is defeating that purpose of its existence.
So how good is the compensating provision? That's the question I kept asking the team when we're developing the replacement to mill standard 1629. It's one thing to say we have a compensating provision, but it's another thing to say how good is it? And that's where the automotive, the new automotive standards have an entire sub FMEA, basically a targeted FMEA called MSR, Monitoring and System Response FMEA. And they use a procedure to evaluate how good that provision is. And it's, and that could be the subject of another podcast. Do we need to go into a completely separate procedure, or can we do this as all part of the FMEA? I'm inclined more towards one FMEA.
Okay. Yeah, usually that depends, right? If it's a brand new system, yeah, go study it. If it's well-versed, you got 10 years of history on it and lots of information, then you don't.
Right, right. So there's the evaluation of how good your compensating provisions are is an important topic. Yeah. And the new 1025 standard, we have different conditions to support that evaluation. And then we reevaluate the end effect. In the EIAG VDA standard or the previous SAE standard, J1739, they have about six steps that are added to the procedure to evaluate that. So there's different ways you can go about it. But I wanted to explain to listeners and to answer the question from these editors that were editing the book, the volunteer editors, of what compensating provisions are. They could either be something that's part of the design, and or they could be something that the operator, which means like the person who operates the equipment or the pilot or whoever the operator is, something they put in place, an operator action that's part of the overall system. In other words, if you see this flashing light, you trip this switch.
Yeah. If you hear this sound, do this. If it's behaving this way, do this. It's there's all kinds of ways the signals can get to a trained person.
So much of that is getting automated, Fred. The what used to be where you rely more on the operator, human, is now more getting automated. And so that's a different subject itself. So that's why in the column we say design provisions and or operator actions. Because the operator actions are getting less over time with increased technology. So that's what that column is. And it is present in the new SAE 1025, which replaces the mill standard 1629 and is available and is very likely to eventually replace a lot of the commercial. I think it's very well written.
I think you had a hand in that.
Yeah. No. Well, we did. That was 5 years of regular.
Oh, I remember meetings. We talked about it. We talked about it a few times. Just why do you ever get involved with a standard after that podcast?
I'm such a glutton for punishment.
I guess so.
I enjoy the standards committees because that's how we can make standards work. You and I both have a very similar philosophy is on standards, which is standards don't work just by themselves. You don't automatically just follow the menu, the recipe of a standard, and that you automatically have safe and reliable. The standard has to be well-written and a good standard, and then you also have to be sure that you do what's necessary to get safe and reliable.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to get the standards on FMEA. That's one of my goals, to be well written, focus on principles and concepts, but they don't replace knowledge of fundamentals. They don't replace good practices and experience. So this is a deep subject.
It is, and but you wrote about it, and they got an ebook coming out, and that's prompted getting reviewers, and the reviewers sound like they're excellent. They're giving you not only great feedback, but a bunch of questions too. So I think this book's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. I just can't wait for it to come out and trying to make a difference. I'm obviously retired, so I'm not really trying to open up a practice. This is just trying to create good products in the best possible way. So just rounding this off, if you're a listener, I'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from you. Do you use compensating provisions? If not, how do you compensate?
How do you account for them?
For not having compensating provisions?
Yeah.
Is it a meaningful part of the procedure, in your opinion? Love to hear from you on that or any other subjects.
Yeah, and that's a big feed into a lot of our shows, is hearing from folks from all the different ways that we can do it. And I'll give you a quick rundown, as you can go over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. The actual URL is a little longer, so I shorten it by the magic of technology to that. And there's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. You can leave a voice message, or you could leave a written message, and we all get that. Or you can contact us directly. Carl and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. And we all enjoy hearing from you and what's on your mind, what kind of comments or questions you have. And we all really work to get you an answer and keep you moving, so you don't have to wait for a week or sometimes 2 months to get the podcast to come out. It gives us topics that are relevant to you because you provided them. So we really look forward to hearing from you.
Well said, Fred. Fantastic.
Thanks, Carl, and good luck with the book. And hopefully, I don't know if this means all these questions that you have to rewrite it, but hopefully it's if nothing else, we're going to get the word out one way or the other.
Absolutely. Well, the questions are so good, and the comments are so good. I am doing some rewrites. Even if my principles are correct, how I communicate them and what examples I use needs to come across to people, because it's the reader, the user, that's important, how they see it. So I have to always hone my message to make it simpler and simpler and simpler. Well, really appreciate that as well.
Yeah. No, it sounds like it's going to be an excellent new addition to the library. So I'm looking forward to that. All right. Thanks so much, Carl. We'll talk to you soon.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.